The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland. How you doing? It's happening.
Doing well, my friend. Welcome back from vacation.
Yeah, man. First of all, thank you to JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. Usually there's more than one person who fills in over 2 weeks.
Matt Brown. Matt Brown did it as well? He did a day.
All right.
He did one.
Well, 9/10 thanks to JVT. 10% to Matthew Brown. Thank you very much. Operating on 1 hour sleep here, Kelly.
Yeah, jet lag, baby. So what was it? 14 hours sometime yesterday.
Yeah,
and then 1 hour to try to reset yourself.
I can't sleep. You're screwed up. Couldn't sleep, so I may fall asleep mid sentence today, which will be fun.
You're gonna be toast for like a week.
I may fall asleep mid sentence, or I might hallucinate that while I was gone, Isaiah tried to eat McNuggets on air.
100 of them in 100 minutes.
How did that go down?
Oh, I'll tell you. It was a long story leading up to it, backstory about we were talking about what was it? Hakeem that filmed the commercial in the 90s with like Dunkin' Nuggets, and some story came out about he had to do it like 100 takes of it. So we got talking about that. Then we got talking about unsettled side bets here at VSiN.
Oh, so many.
Like Matt Brown's kick and everything.
So many of them.
So we lined them all up. And then it was, you know, I know Isaiah was going to be chirping that he could do the Nuggets thing.
He's a chirper.
So, you know, I lowballed him with $100. I was willing to go up to like 400, but he jumped on it immediately.
How many did he get through, bottom line?
Well, he made it through like 30 in about 10 minutes, Gil. You would have been like, man, this guy's cruising. He hit a wall at about 45. At 50, he tapped out. 50 minutes into the show.
Wow.
Didn't even get to second hour.
So I missed a lot.
Yeah, I missed a lot. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what else I missed. First of all, Drew Dinsick on the show today. Talk Women's World Cup and football with Drew Dinsick coming up. Chrissy Andrews in studio, as always, on a Tuesday. It'll be nice to catch up with Chrissy. Paul Carr on the Women's World Cup and Mark Borchardt. Let's do some baseball today. Get his best bets season long here at this point. 100 games roughly through the season. So the 100-game mark, a nice point to reset and go with his best season-long remaining bets, that is, what he's got today in baseball. And, of course, we used to do some of the 100-game mark, Mark Borchardt and I, which was sort of the sabermetrics all-stars, which are just noting a pitcher or two who have supremely overperformed and underperformed to this point in the season. So we'll get into that with Borchardt. Biggest thing I missed, of course, it did happen. It happened, to quote the great Jim Lampley, when George Foreman knocked out Michael Moore, and he exclaimed, "It happened! It happened!" Washington football team got sold officially. Daniel Snyder out, Josh Harris in. This was huge for some of us who grew up in that area and are lifelong fans. There is one offshore, Kelly, that has decided to post odds on a potential name change. The name change, by the way, will happen. Will happen. Just won't happen this offseason, in my opinion. But I think next offseason it absolutely will. And when there's more time to run through it. Because the people have spoken. They don't want the Commanders. And right now this offshore, Will Washington changed the name, by the way. The yes is minus 400. The no is plus 250. I think the yes is correct there. But the next name of the Washington franchise, Spartans, is the short shot at 6-1. When did that happen?
Ugh, not better.
When did that happen? Football team, by the way, reverting back to Washington football team, 7-1. Could be. Red Hogs, Kelly, a nod to the past of the team, both with the red and with the Hogs, I suppose. The Hogs is what I'm talking about primarily, though.
Yeah.
8-1.
Why isn't it just the Hogs, though?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that the most obvious one, or am I crazy?
No, you're probably right.
Okay.
But I guess they...
And it's not even listed.
Yeah, they're just being clever. I mean, this is an offshore. Yeah. Who knows if it has any basis in any sort of reality. And the DC's at 12-1. By the way, my favorite, the Power. Never gets mentioned. I'm the only one who seems to like it. The Washington.
Power. I like that.
Except it's singular, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
People have a problem with that. Washington Power. Just put a big fist on the helmet and you're good to go. Power, followed by football team. I don't think you can go back. But for those who are like, can you go back to the older name?
Yeah.
I think once that genie is out of the bottle, you cannot.
Yeah, I think that. No way. No way on that one. But the... It's interesting because I feel like Washington football team is not going to be everyone's first choice, but it would be their second choice.
Yes, that's correct.
Like, it's the one that everybody would be okay with because we already know everybody's okay with.
Like in an MVP voting when they vote 1, 2, 3, 4, and five,
exactly,
it'll end
yeah.
up winning the MVP for the most second place votes, but not the most first. Anyways, that's something fun offshore. As far as like legit things that are available everywhere, NL Cy Young comes to mind, and I want to just talk about this off the top before we get to our guest today. I have multiple bets on Spencer Strider to win the National League Cy Young. We sort of updated this a couple months ago, but I just want to get into one of the tried and true indicators of who ends up winning the Cy Young. So now, again, I have a couple bets on Spencer Strider. Why do I have those bets on him, the Atlanta Braves ace? Well, so many advanced stats, third in fielding independent, first in XFIP, fifth in WAR, first in Sierra, first in K percentage, tied for first in wins, even into the non-advanced stats, the standard baseball card stats. We could go on, and Borchardt and I will later in the Sabermetrics All-Stars. So many reasons why I think Strider should be the NL Cy Young Award winner if it were voted on today. But who cares, honestly, Kelly, what I have to say when you have someone and some device that has accurately predicted Cy Young Award winners, the eventual Cy Young Award winners, with supreme accuracy through the years. And it goes back to Tom Tango. Tom Tango is a baseball sabermetrician, for lack of a better word. He's an innovator in baseball advanced stats. He, among other things, came up with fielding independent pitching. He is the one who developed the run expectancy matrix for those who delve into these kinds of things. So Tango knows what he's doing on multiple fronts in baseball analytics. And when it comes to the Cy Young, just to sort of give you his street cred on this, in case you missed the first time we went through this, he has accuracy. So in 2015, let's go back some years. 2015, his method of picking a Cy Young Award winner, both the AL and NL, he got the top five in both leagues right in the right order, 1 through 5. 2016, wow. His method correctly predicted the three finalists in both leagues. 2017, he got all of the AL finalists in order. And let me start again in 2017 just to sort of go to the present day. 2017, he nailed Corey Kluber in the American League. 2018, he hit Blake Snell in the American League. 2019, he hit both Verlander in the American League and DeGrom in the NL. 2020, Bieber in the American League. 2021, these are the eventual Cy Young Award winners. 2021, he did not hit either. 2022, last year, he hit both Verlander in the American League and Alcantara in the National League. So out of the last 12, talking about from 2017 on to today, he's hit 7 of the 12 winners.
It's not a bad track record.
Pretty
it's
good.
It's not perfect.
It's not infallible. It's not infallible. But it's about
it's
as good.
Damn impressive.
Yeah, it's about as impressive as you get. So someone like me can go on and prattle on and on about, well, I think these advanced stats, and look at all these advanced stats, and this should be the Cy Young Award winner. It doesn't really necessarily manifest in reality. What ends up manifesting is Tom Tango's Cy Young point system. And I'm going to give you the formula. We're going to reveal what his top five are now are in each league and juxtapose them against the current betting odds. But, and I know I didn't sort of warn you there's going to be some math here, but this is the simple formula that he has. Ready for this? Innings pitched divided by 2 minus earned runs plus strikeouts divided by 10 plus wins. That's it. None of this fielding independent, XFIP, WAR, K percentage. Again, simply put, innings pitched divided by 2 minus earned runs plus strikeouts divided by 10 plus wins. You don't have to know that. I'll just give you what it comes up with. Let's start with the American League, if we could, Kelly, because this is more straightforward and it's more in sync with the actual market odds currently. Currently, he's got Gerrit Cole as the American Cy Young Award winner. 48.1 Tango points. Again, the points generated by the formula I just gave. Gerrit Cole is the short shot in the American League Cy Young race at plus 175. So Tango is right in sync with it. In fact, his first five guys are the five short guys in the AL Cy Young Award market. Betting market, that is, with a little change in the order, but still in the top five. Nathan Eovaldi would represent the most value per Tom Tango in the American League Cy Young race. He's second per Tango, and he's fifth in the market at DraftKings at plus 750. So Nathan Eovaldi of the Rangers would represent the most value currently per Tom Tango in the American League, though 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are just out of order, if you will. Now, the National League is something entirely different. If you go to the National League, remember when we last did this, Marcus Stroman was his number one. Marcus Stroman is no longer his number one. Marcus Stroman has dropped to number four. But here's the deal. Zach Gallen, who is the short shot, is Tom Tango's number one guy as well. 43.7 National League Cy Young points per Tom Tango, not nearly as high as a collective. But Zach Gallen, who's plus 220 in the NL Cy Young award market, he's number one per Tango. Blake Snell, who's number three in the Cy Young award market in the National League, is second per Tango. So plus 390 at DraftKings is Blake Snell. And here's where it just goes completely out of whack. Tango's third, fourth, and fifth Cy Young selections, or at least by his point system, I should say, currently, are Kershaw, Stroman, and Luzardo of the Marlins. Clayton Kershaw, Marcus Stroman of the Cubs, and Jesus Luzardo of the Marlins are 3-4-5 per Tango. They are 22-1, 25-1, and 22-1, respectively, in the betting market for NL Cy Young. So again, Tango's tried-and-true sort of formula, which isn't infallible, as we've pointed out, but is pretty darn accurate through the years. If you're looking for value, it's Eovaldi currently in the American League, and it's clearly Kershaw, Stroman, or Luzardo, pick your poison, or pick your favorite, in the National League. And it should be pointed out, the reason I included Spencer Strider here, my guy, Strider's sixth in the National League per Tango, and he's plus 270. So per Tango, the dumb money, my money, is on Strider currently. Pretty interesting. I would not have expected Strider to still be that far back. And I'll make the case later with Borchardt as to why Strider, as great as he is probably better than his numbers even suggest currently.
I like it.
But Tango doesn't care.
That's interesting. That is interesting.
Tango don't care. Tango's got the two short shots as the guys to win the Cy Young at this moment. But again, 60 more baseball games to play. Coming up, Drew Dinsick on the Women's World Cup and more. Football next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. We should just also, the disclaimer on what we just talked about, Kelly, because you made a great point off air, right? So in Stroman's case, again, it's one thing where we're talking about where's the value.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing. He's still got the short shots at number one. So value schmalue, you're only trying to pick the winner here. And with the value in the National League, Kershaw's not coming back to early, still early August, and Stroman could be traded. Talk about the 22-1 and 25-1 respectively. And if Stroman is traded out of the league, then that's that.
Yeah, that's a problem. I mean, and I guess it makes sense Kershaw's rated that highly by him. He's just,
yep,
his odds have drifted, which also makes sense because he's missed games.
We get tweets at Beanie the Book, Los Vegas 514. Yo, welcome back. Guess what happened while you were gone? Hope you celebrated appropriately. Let's go. Talking about the Skins. Sam Ginsberg, they should go back to the old name and just claim it's after the potato. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Elvis Toast Patterson fan, welcome back, young Gilly. Get your Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford tickets for Saturday night yet? Or are you driving up to Salt Lake City for UFC? Great fight night, either way. And Ryan Hyatt, here in Gil back on Visa with Kelly. It's like the Swallows getting back to Capistrano. All is right and football's in the air. Let the Survivor strategy sessions begin. It's like the Swallows going back to Capistrano, Kelly.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I have no idea what that means. Ryan Hyatt, though, we love him.
Oh, yeah, great.
Ryan Hyatt had you on a podcast.
Yeah,
I
was just on there last week with those guys, yep.
Ryan Hyatt, bless your heart.
It's a good time.
Yeah, man. Ryan Hyatt, silent producer of Primetime Action.
That's
back
right.
In the day.
That's right.
Drew Dinsick joins us, ladies and gentlemen. He hosts not one but two podcasts. One is The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, Dinsick Classic, as we like to refer to it. The other, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge. He comes to us from the LBC. How you doing, man?
Oh, not too bad. Just up the way from Capistrano, actually. And the Swallows of Capistrano are world famous.
World fame. Well, we know they're world famous. We're just not that bright, Drew, I think is what it comes down to on this on this particular matter. Kelly's like, yeah, we own it. We own that on this. All right, let me ask you a question. Women's World Cup, I hear you're all up in it. First of all, before we get there, Tour de France, did that end up going well for you?
Yes. Jonas Vingegaard. He came through in spectacular fashion. He won the time trial, just absolutely dropped the hammer on Pogacar with about a week to go in the tour. Put a minute 30 on him, I believe, in the time trial. It was a mountain time trial, so it was specifically tooled for those two to show down. And then dropped him the next day, ended up winning by like 7 minutes. So that was a huge result for me. Very, very excited to see Vingegaard come through. And actually sets up an interesting matchup next year. So he's got now two in a row. And Pogacar realistically didn't have the best preparation because he came in, you know, having broken his wrist in April, didn't ride in the Dauphine, didn't do a number of the kind of typical warm-up races if you're really going to compete for a yellow jersey. Next year, I would expect that he is kind of in, you know, fully fit for the tour. And I think Team UAE showed that they have some top-end talent and they can kind of build around that and have a stronger team, which should kind of maybe give you a decent price on Pogacar next year to come in and stop the three-peat.
All right. So before we get into the Women's World Cup, then it begs the question, because I want to ask this, because there's people who are always new listeners and they're listening to you for the first time or maybe the second time. And they're like, oh, this guy, Drew, is interesting. He's super into football, which we're all into. And then he really does pick his spots. Like, we don't hear him talking baseball. He likes the NBA, but he doesn't play college sports. Then he gets fascinated by the tour. Now he's obviously a tennis guy. Now he's fascinated by the Women's World Cup. What would you say to someone who would ask, okay, what is it that you see in what you end up betting that makes you go and bet it?
That's it's a fair question. You know, the particular timing, I think, matters for a lot of this stuff, right? Like, I learned the hard way to compartmentalize and not try to beat NFL and college football. Like, I don't think realistically you're going to originate a fair or a good number in both if you're trying to do all of that at once. At best, you can get information in one sport and maybe even only in one division or one, you know, one league. It's, you know, kind of picking your places to where you're giving your handicap a fair time matters. When you get into the summer, the dog days of summer, surely, tennis takes over for me because there's really nothing else going on day by day that, I'm betting into. But the Tour de France holds a special place because it's perfectly scheduled with those of us on the West Coast. You wake up, you get your coffee, you flip on NBC and there you have like just these unbelievable aerial shots of some of the most beautiful parts of Europe. And it's just like, okay, well, if I'm going to be sitting around watching this, I might as well have some skin in the game. Right. And so then you start to handicap it. And the next thing you know, you're betting into some of the outright markets. And, you know, for something like the Tour de France, I learned the hard way again, not to try to really handicap any given stage, any given day. Those markets are like, that's like trying to hit first round leader in golf. Like, it's just, there's chaos. You don't really know what teams are really trying to do on any given day. It's much better to go for the longer outright markets. That helps you have some skin in it while also not, kind of burning your bankroll. It's all about the calendar. NFL and tennis, as you know, are a perfect handshake.
It's
such a perfect handshake.
It's as if tennis calls up the NFL league office and says, here's what we're going to do, right? Australian Open, right when your playoffs are already in full swing. Everything else, like up to the US Open stops right literally as the NFL week one begins. It is the most perfect of them all for sure. But that's often not said, right? We talk about, we want smaller markets, the ones that are, less market efficient. That's all true, but the calendar does matter in that. So we get to the Women's World Cup, which only happens, once every several years. What have you been able to cull from it just from a macro standpoint thus far?
Well, the macro story is pretty obvious. There's no goals. Yes. And, those who follow international soccer and the way that it tends to manifest, this isn't surprising. It's kind of been a longstanding, kind of macro angle that the round one of group stage is there's unexpected stuff. There's low scoring because, these players are all coming from international club play where they have very well-defined roles and responsibilities. They have great chemistry with their teammates. And now you just kind of stir it all up and mix it all up and bang, here's a new group of players. There's lots of crossover in terms of roles, responsibilities, strengths, and weaknesses. And it takes a little bit of time for, things to click into top gear. And it didn't used to be this way necessarily with women's soccer, but women's international club soccer has really blown up. And, all of these players are playing in, throughout the year now. And I think that's definitely impacted their ability to have international chemistry. And so you're seeing it, it's particularly with the European teams outside of Spain and Germany have really, really, kind of stubbed their toe to this point in the competition. Norway was something like a -300 favorite to win Group A. They have yet to get a win. They have a loss, an ugly loss to New Zealand in the opener, and a draw last night to Switzerland. So they're in deep trouble. Thankfully for them, New Zealand did not beat the Philippines and secure the group. So they still have an outside chance at getting through to a knockout play. But England has looked questionable. France obviously drawing against in their first match was not what they expected to come in to do. They were one of the hotter teams.
Yeah.
Similarly, Australia, potentially without Sam Kerr now, they may be missing their best player. So really the top tier outside of, Spain and Germany has, underwhelmed to this point in the World Cup. And, I think USA is still the team to beat. That's really the only heavy outright action I have here so far. My thesis of the knockout draw being somewhat lopsided is starting to erode, because it looks like Spain is going to be your semifinal opponent and Germany might be your final opponent. And again, of what we've seen so far, those are the two best teams playing. And in hindsight, we should have seen that coming, because they have the leaders of the team all play on the same club team. So it's, the chemistry is sort of already built in. So lesson learned for next World Cup.
Anything on these next four games starting tonight with Colombia and South Korea?
That was last night.
We got it wrong on the screen. These were yesterday's. Yeah, starting with, I should say, Japan and Costa Rica tonight.
Yeah, Japan's going to win going away there. That one's not going to be especially competitive. But I think you're going to start to see a little bit of a pivot here as we, come out of, the travel issues start to wear off and you're starting to develop some chemistry. We're going to start to see, some of the cream rise. And I think that includes Team USA beating the Netherlands. I laid the goals there. I was surprised that money line was as low as it was. Team USA 2-0, 3-0 is sort of the expected outcome there for me. So let's go USA.
That's your play of the night. Korea, by the way, just blasted by Colombia. The second goal going right through the goaltender's hands was not fun. If you had any thoughts of South Korea last night, we'll come back. A little more World Cup and football with Drew. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The NFL Betting Guide is out now, and our College Football Guide is coming in just a couple weeks. Only Visa Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full Visa Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription to get your first 30 days for only $19. To see everything VSiN has up to up your betting game, that is. This offer ends July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Once again, sign up a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Today we get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciated. This is from Tom F. Welcome back, Gilly Ice. Going to be so awkward to hear we get X's instead of tweets. LOL. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, we had to try to navigate that immediately yesterday. We're like, how do we?
We get tweets.
And I went to the dictionary yesterday, right? Because tweet is a word in the dictionary.
Yes.
So what are we doing now? We're just tossing that out of the dictionary, or we're just going to keep using tweets?
Well, he doesn't have any control over the dictionary. It's still a word.
Yeah, I know, but like, is it gonna? But
did you not know tweet was a word?
It no longer refers. No, but tweet, like the act of using Twitter to send.
Yes.
Not like the sound a bird makes.
Oh, I see. You're saying that definition was in the dictionary.
Correct. That definition should be removed.
Oh, well, I think it would.
Or we're just keeping it as we're tweeting on X.
I don't think I'm going to stop saying tweets. Is that wrong? Is that bad?
And if you are on X, don't tweet. You shouldn't tweet while you're on X.
PSA.
PSA.
Your pro tip of the hour. Jesse Welch, maybe we can get a sleep-deprived Gil to slip up and give out a secret sushi spot. Welcome back, Gilly. We missed you. Thank you, sir. Touchdown, Jesus. Gil returns. Haven't felt this good since Jabbour was up 4-2 in the first. Welcome back. Oh, yeah, we got to talk about tennis. Kenny G, welcome back, Gil. Hope you enjoyed your vacation. Let the Survivor talk get started. Thank you. Or should I say in Korean, where I was. Are you ready for this, Kelly? A little Korean talk?
Show off.
Gamsahamnida. Thank you.
Use it in a sentence.
I can't. Gamsahamnida. It's like very sing-songy. It's a beautiful language. Beautiful language. By the way, beautiful culture. Everybody's so polite. A no-tip culture.
Okay.
Because it's viewed as disrespect because what they are providing is should already be good enough. How about that, Americans?
The automatic checkout at Smith's asked me yesterday again if I'd like to tip them. Right.
Let's bring Drew back. Drew Dinsick for both the Bet the Edge and Deep Dive podcast. And Drew, let me start because real quick before we get to the tennis, Kelly spent the greater part of the break looking up Swallows of Capistrano. Could you give us the Dumb and Dumber quote from it on there?
Yes. No, it's You know, Lloyd Christmas convincing his buddy, we got to go return the suitcase out to Aspen, beautiful Aspen, Colorado, where the women flock like the salmon of Capistrano. The Swallows of Capistrano, huge among the birding community.
Sure.
They have outstanding bird song. And maybe even more than that, it's huge for the bird watchers because they're kind of like they're aerial trick artists. Just watching them fly and, you know, eating the insects is it's mesmerizing. So wow. Huge among the birding community here in Southern California.
I think Drew just referenced former Kansas City King Otis Birdsong, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I got out of it.
And they migrate to Argentina every year.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Nice time this time here. All right, Drew, tennis, because a tweet here brought it up. And again, thank you for all the tweets. We appreciate it at Beating the Book. But Touchdown Jesus brings it up. In the end, you ended up having a great Wimbledon. I believe I had a crappy Wimbledon. And in the end, it is not only Carlos Alcaraz over Novak Djokovic, which you called, as I recall, on the Beating the Book podcast, which we did beforehand. And then it was Marketa Vondrasova on the women's side, which I don't even believe we ever mentioned, if I'm not mistaken. Your thoughts on the entire tournament as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I give us a pass on missing the Vondi call because she hadn't won a title since 2017. She had like two grass wins in her life before Wimbledon. That was a wild run by her. And, you know, I've struggled to find the mental space to give her credit for that because her approach in the final was literally, I'm just going to be a backboard and let this meltdown happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, she didn't make any mistakes, so good job there. She didn't melt down. So you know, that would have been an easy spot to do that. For me, the women's side, the story was all about Ons, and you know, I'm an apologist, I'm a Ons fan, so my takeaways were, well, you know, she answered a lot of questions in this tournament. She beat some very, very, very talented opponents. She had comebacks against Rybakina and Sabalenka, which were all timers.
Amazing comebacks,
Yeah. Amazing comebacks. And I think realistically, it's fair to expect that she's in the mix again next year, if not in the final again next year. And
so it does not
she ever be able to overcome.
Yeah, because that's the obvious question, right? That is those comebacks were great. But she's 0-3 now in Slam Finals. You think her days are you sound like you don't think that it's done for her. She will be back, you think?
I would say so, yeah. And I think I don't know what it's going to take for her to actually succeed in the final, because pretty clearly the minute she starts thinking about how close she is
absolutely.
To, you know, that, you know, the brass ring, it all starts to fall apart. You know, realistically, the underdog status suited her fairly well against Kvitova, against, you know, Rybakina, against Sabalenka. It felt like the underdog mentality kind of helped elevate her performance. And then as soon as it was, I'm expected to win this final. I'm going to win Wimbledon finally. Like as soon as those thoughts sort of crept in, it started to all come apart. So I don't know what it's going to take for her to kind of get over that, but I have relatively little doubt that she's going to be in the mix next year. I think she's pretty, you know, she's shown that she's the class player on tour on grass. And the level we saw from her in the second and third set against Rybakina, that was the best of any of the women that I saw play.
Yeah, she did. As I mentioned on the podcast, her grass numbers were the best of the bunch heading in.
Yeah.
But something happens in the final for sure. But you did hit Alcaraz, who, again, we've been betting here on this show since he was playing like clay court tournaments in the edge of the earth when he was 16 years old. And like with Iga, saw big things coming for him, but the difference was is that there was always the big three that existed in the men's side, so it was hard to, you know, jump to the conclusion that you could with Iga. But here he is, and now he won Wimbledon, and so now you just wonder. I mean, is this the floodgates about to open?
Yeah, I mean, when Djokovic broke through in 2008, it took him 3 years to win a second slam. This is the guy that has now 23. the idea that he backed up last year's U.S. Open with another slam already is scary for anyone else on tour who has aspirations of being a slam champion. I think the actual match itself was the high point of tennis this season, I think, in every regard. It was a really, really, really good match from the way it all unfolded, particularly in contrast to the way their match unfolded in Roland Garros. And I didn't get the prices. Full transparency. I didn't get the prices I was hoping on Alcaraz in that match in that moment. I thought it was. I thought that the scars of people who went to the well to bet him at Roland Garros and got burned, I figured that was going to prevent any kind of momentum in the betting market to get behind Alcaraz in the Wimbledon final, where Djokovic hadn't lost on center court since 2013 and hadn't lost at all in Wimbledon since 2017. And no one on earth has beaten this guy, blah, blah, blah. So, I didn't think that we were going to, I didn't think there was going to be momentum to support him in the final. So I didn't get as big a stake, as good a price as I was hoping. That said, it was still a huge, huge win. And I give him most of the credit. He put on an incredible performance. He was mentally tough. He played like he had nothing to lose. And I think that was sort of the key theme between both the finals. Like, the player playing with nothing to lose, performed, more naturally, less mental baggage. The pressure was on Djokovic. He was chasing a calendar slam. He was chasing Federer's record of 8 Wimbledons, chasing Margaret Court's record of 24 slams. Like, he was carrying the weight of expectation, not Alcaraz. And I thought that made a huge difference, on top of the fact that conditions, I thought, played well for him. He didn't have any, the wind, I thought, impacted Djokovic's service. Once Alcaraz kind of started finding some winners, it just felt like, the tide had completely turned. And I'm excited for the rubber match in the U.S. Open final.
Yeah, looks that way. Looks that way. Some others will have something to say about it, but it certainly would be the chalk right now. Real quick before you go, Saquon Barkley, the football news of the day, does agree to a one-year deal with the Giants. 1 year, $11 million, or could be up to $11 million in incentives. If they franchised him, it would have been over $10 million. So this is sort of a, right after he says, I might have to, basically insinuate that he was going to sit out, they come to this agreement. This was already built in. This doesn't move the needle at all for you, does it?
No. I mean, it's good for the Giants, obviously. If they had not had him, their skill position group is one of the worst in the NFL. It's fine for Barkley. I mean, this is fair compensation for him. The annoying part of all this is just the NFL news cycle and the talking head stuff about compensation for running backs. Exactly fair.
Yes.
Like, it is what it is. Like, the moaning and complaining, like, get over yourselves, guys.
So true.
Like, Barkley was the 8th best running back last year by my numbers. I would expect, and he's got an availability problem. Like, there's in no universe should the Giants dole out a multi-year contract for that kind of player.
And running backs get hurt. They get busted up. It's just how it is. It really is the annoying part of it. I would agree with it. Drew, thank you as always, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, best luck, guys.
Drew Dinsick. Coming back, Paul Carr on the Women's World Cup. On the other side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Step up to the plate for BetMGM's new Swing for the Fences free-to-play game for the chance to win a prize every day this baseball season. Pick an area of the strike zone and take your best swing in this free-to-play game. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet. on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 and over to wager. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Kansas, Nevada, New York, and Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text Hope New York. That's HOPENY 467-369. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel, this offer is not valid to Puerto Rico residents. By the way, Kelly, thank you very much. JVT didn't rock all the states? Did he not rock all the states?
He didn't get through all the states.
By the way, Kelly, I want to say annyeong haseyo to our new listeners in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah,
by the
that's
way,
right.
That's hello in Korean. I'll stop with the Korean.
Yeah,
I got
had
like
well.
Had like three phrases that got me through the whole thing.
I was going to say, you're going to run out of phrases anyways.
As sports betting continues to grow, so does VSiN. You can hear VSiN now 24-7 on 1480 The Line in Richmond, Virginia. Welcome to the VSiN family, and thank you for checking out the Sports Betting Network. Glad to have you aboard.
Yeah, let's go Richmond.
I don't mean to bring things down here, Kelly, but it appears this definitely needs to be reported. This is just coming down from Shams Charania. USC All-American Bronny James collapsed on the court yesterday and had a cardiac arrest. He was taken to the hospital and is now in stable condition and no longer in the ICU. The statement reads, yesterday while practicing, Bronny James suffered cardiac arrest. Or as they say it, a cardiac arrest. Medical staff was able to treat Bronny and take him to the hospital. He is now in stable condition and no longer in ICU. We ask for respect and privacy for the James family, and we will update media when there's more information. LeBron and Savannah wish to publicly send their deepest thanks and appreciation to the USC medical and athletic staff for the incredible work and dedication to the safety of their athletes. Unquote. Wow. Glad that he's doing better. This just coming down. This happened yesterday, but just news of this now coming down from Shams. Whew.
So, I mean, I'm glad to hear he's not in the ICU anymore. Obviously, hope and pray the best for him.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's just crazy, but the day and age we live in, like, it's almost wild. This didn't come out yesterday, and I'm almost happy for the family it didn't, right? Where you didn't have to deal with media and everything swarming over this.
100%. Well, we hope for the best, and hopefully his recovery continues in the trajectory that it is. We bring in Paul Carr, no real artful transition. Paul Carr joins us from Topeka, Kansas. He, of course, is the host of the Expected Value podcast, works at True Media Networks. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul Carr, that's C-A-R-R. How you doing, Paulie? What's happening?
I'm doing well, Gil. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, man. Thank you. So we were talking with Drew earlier, Drew Dinsick, about the Women's World Cup, and there are definitely, from a macro standpoint, right, it's like very few goals being scored unless it's the big, you know, sides that everybody expects, the Spains, the Germanies, the United States. The other thing, and there's so many other ones, one of them is just few upsets, period, correct?
Yeah, we're looking at outright upsets, really a couple major ones. New Zealand beat Norway in the opener. Philippines beat New Zealand overnight. That's about it from a wins. Jamaica drew France was a pretty big surprise, but it's been more or less according to form. I mean, things, and part of this is it's a 32-team World Cup. It's the first one that's 32 teams. So you've got a few more teams that may not have been there before. So some of it's you're just going to have a little bit more discrepancy. That's a little bit of it. And part of it's just kind of, you know, good teams are doing what good teams have to do so far.
Yeah, and one of the bets you love to make when we were talking Premier League is both teams to score. Where do we stand now on the no on that?
I wish I had taken the no every single game because it's hit in 17 out of 18 games so far. Again, some of that's a discrepancy. Good teams score, bad teams don't in general. But I think kind of in a way the opposite is true. Like some of these bottom teams, like the defenses are just a lot better than they have been in recent tournaments. And more kind of your mid to bottom teams, your Ireland types, Jamaica played pretty good defense against France. So that's part of it. And it's just, Drew mentioned this, the first game of these tournaments tend to be conservative. Historically, they always have been. And it's just, it's extending the tournament. If you get smoked in your opener, you're kind of done almost for the tournament. Whereas If you get a draw, you know, a little over half teams advance after draws in their first matches. If you lose, it's like 13% historically. So that's part of it, is you just kind of don't blow the tournament for yourself until, you know, we absolutely have to. So some of these teams may open up a little more in the second and third games because they have to, and they have to get 3 points. But you see a lot of conservative play early in tournaments, and that's what we've seen so far.
Yeah, the low scoring is also, and this might just be anecdotal, but from what I've seen, sort of punctuated almost comically by some of the more ridiculous offside goals where it's not even for a moment do you think they'll count. You're like, that's not counting. She was right. Like way offside.
It's a weird, they changed the rules a year or two ago where refs are supposed to let those go just because if you stop it and you're wrong, they obviously don't have the chance to score the goal. So the referees are supposed to let it go. Sometimes even if it's, you know, very obvious to, you know, amateurs like us, with the naked eye to see it. So it feels wrong. It's kind of the right thing to do, and it's what they're supposed to do, but it doesn't feel right when everyone's playing, even though everyone knows someone's offside.
All right, so where do we stand on futures now?
Futures, you know, the U.S. is still a favorite. You know, the plus 250-ish everywhere. Again, you want to jump on that as a fan. I don't think that's a terrible price. The only real change at the top is that Spain's your second favorite now. They were... They're down around plus, what is it, plus 350, I think, now. And England's closer to plus 550, plus 600. I mean, I don't have any real play here, but I will say if you like England, and they didn't look great in their opener against Haiti, but if you liked them before the tournament at like plus 450, plus 400, maybe shorter, I mean, you can get a better price now, and they won their opener. So it's not like anything's really changed for England. It just didn't look that great. Again, I'm not saying I'm playing it. I'm not rushing out to play it, but if that was your pre-tournament stance, you can get an even better price now.
All right, and then Golden Boot, when we did the preview with you, you had a couple picks, I believe. Nothing's changed there because those are looking pretty good, huh?
Right. Yeah, Alexandra Popp was my pick. You could get her at plus 1,600 some places, which I did. She scored twice in the opener, and now she's down to plus 350. Right. So, don't go out and play her now, but she's in a good spot. It's the same formula for any tournament. You want someone on a good team who's going to score a lot of goals. You want someone who's got some weak group opponents, like Germany has a relatively soft group. And we think Pop takes penalties. It's a little fuzzy because they haven't had a lot of penalties lately. But yeah, there was a pretty good value on her, and it looks even better now.
Okay, so now we have another four games coming up. You have plays in a couple of them. One involves the United States?
Yeah, so the U.S. will play Wednesday evening. It's 8 p.m. Central time. I like U.S. against Netherlands a lot. This is a rematch of the final from 2019. The difference here is the Dutch do not have Vivian Medema, who's their top scorer, almost 100 international goals for her. She is injured, not at the tournament. And the U.S. looked, you know, okay. They didn't obviously blow out Vietnam in the opener, but they're still the U.S. They're better, they're deeper, they're fitter than any team in the world still. So I like the U.S. I'll play an alternate line of laying a goal and a half, and you can get plus 210 on this. Drew mentioned it again, feels like a 2-0 type of win for the U.S. It's what the final was 4 years ago. Just think U.S. is better. The Dutch didn't show a whole lot against Portugal, not a lot of firepower, even against kind of an average at best European team. So the U.S. is obviously a lot better, and getting a nice plus 200, plus 210 price on laying a goal and a half, I'll do that with the U.S.
And then you do have one tomorrow morning as well.
Yeah, I've been fading Canada for just about any way possible in this tournament. I just think they're an older team that can't score. They couldn't score against Nigeria, and Nigeria's defense is not as good as Ireland's. That's who Canada plays early tomorrow morning. So I like Ireland almost any way you want to play this. I did the double chance at plus 130. If you want to try a draw or even a win, I don't hate it. You want to go under 2.5 or both teams to score? No, those are all pretty reasonable too, because those are hitting all over the place, but those are going to be in the like minus 180, minus 190 range. So I played Ireland double chance plus 130 against Canada tomorrow morning.
Yeah. You mentioned something in there, which I don't want to gloss over, which is I wonder how many, again, this is not games involving the U.S. or Spain of that ilk, Germany, not big, you know, prohibitive favorites like we have tonight in terms of the, the Spain-Zambia game as well, but also the Japan-Costa Rica game. But anything that's remotely competitive, I wonder how many people are just blindly undering and drawing, if you will.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's,
yeah, that's kind
it's
of
12 of 18 games, I think, have had under 3 goals. And yeah, the ones that haven't are like Spain, US, Japan, Germany, Brazil. Like those are pretty much the ones that haven't. So yeah, blindly betting under 2.5 or something is not the worst strategy. Obviously it's juicy, but it's been paying off so far.
Yeah, and draws as well, because you're obviously getting bang for your buck there. They're not going to happen every time, but the bang for the buck makes it worthwhile in some of those instances too. betting against human achievement here, Paul, is not has not been a terrible thing at all. And that's the understatement of them all.
You have to wake up early and then root for nothing.
Oh, I did it with Norway, Switzerland. I woke up on my, I did the thing where the thumb is over the score and I'm like, zero, zero. There you go. I think a lot of people
look like looking at your whole cards. You kind of slowly reveal them.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk again. Thank you, Paul.
You bet. Have a good one.
Paul Carr, everybody, from the Expected Value Podcast. We'll come back. Mark Borchardt. Let's talk some MLB. Best season-long bets remaining next.